You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello everyone, Rob Guest from football.london and welcome to the latest episode of Gold and Guest Talk Tottenham. We've got Tottenham's 1-1 draw against Liverpool to discuss today, as well as some comments from a certain German manager after the game. Alistair Gold is joining me as ever. Ali, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. I made it back from Liverpool. I made it back from what appears to be the stag do and hen do capital of the world right now. Obviously, because of the late night, I had to stay over in Liverpool and just seemed to be various kind of drunken brides-to-be littered around some of the streets and under the steps of the hotel that I was staying at, which was a strange sight. But I quite like Liverpool. It was like the first chance I've actually had to walk around Liverpool. Normally, I just go straight to Anfield or that other stadium on the other side of Liverpool. And, yeah, whereas this time I actually got to walk around it a little bit, and yeah, it was good. And the match was a fascinating match is probably the best way to put it. It wasn't a thriller, but you know, I was pretty impressed with Spurs. It's just such a shame that it wasn't really the result that they wanted or needed, because any other point in the season, and I think that's a performance they come away and really build on. Whereas, unfortunately, it's kind of come at a time when it just needed that a little bit more. But gives us plenty to talk about anyway.
Yeah, plenty to talk about. And yeah, Liverpool is a great city. If anyone's not been, I definitely do recommend it. It's a really, really good place. In terms of the game then, I mean, Tottenham really potentially could have left Anfield with all 3 points, leading thanks to Son Heung-min's goal in the second half. Luis Diaz, who was linked with a move to Tottenham in January, saw a deflected effort go in 16 minutes from time, and Spurs did have a chance right at the end through Pierre-Emil Højbjerg to win it, but he didn't take it. So a 1-1 draw. I know a lot's been said about Tottenham's performance and their approach to the game. Do you want to just give us your thoughts, first of all, on what you saw at Anfield?
Yeah, I saw an incredibly well-drilled Tottenham team. Conte had the full 7 days to work with the team on the pitches of Hotspur Way, and when that happens, you get performances like that. You do. Obviously, people might say, well, you know, why couldn't they do that against Brighton and Brentford? And that's absolutely understandable. But in this kind of game, I think he relished the tactical battle, Conte. And this is the thing. I don't know. There's this narrative that, as you keep calling him, certain German manager, we are going to name Jurgen Klopp at some point. Well, there you go. Just named him. But yeah, there's this narrative that was kind of tried to be pushed out after the game about like Spurs were parking the bus or something. They weren't at all, because the whole point of Conte's game plan, and he kept talking about it afterwards, was passing around the press. So it wasn't a case of they were all sitting back hoofing it and hoping something happened. The whole plan, you could see it out there. And that's what was scaring the Spurs fans so much, was that they kept trying to pass around the press or dribble around the press. And had they had a little bit better decision making in the final third, I think Spurs would have carved Liverpool apart a lot. You know, they would have had a lot more chances than they ended up having, and they had enough chances to win the game. We're gonna talk about all of that in a bit, so I don't want to trample all of that too early. But in terms of the performance, I thought there were some phenomenal displays among the team. The back line, all back three were brilliant. Lloris really didn't have much to do. As I was just saying to you before we recorded this, so the recording was that I watched Match of the Day 2 for the first time just this morning. Finally got to kind of see some footage of the game rather than just what I saw live with my eyes. And you could see Match of the Day 2 didn't really know what to do in terms of showing Liverpool chances. They were showing these random headers and things that just went off miles away from the goal, but like closer to the corner flag than the goal. And it was because Spurs restricted Liverpool to these pot shots. I'd say Spurs' chances on the night were the better chances. I think they were. Liverpool's efforts, I mean, all I can really remember in my head was Van Dijk heading against the bar, Lloris having this kind of push away Sessegnon's miscued header. I feel like there was one save he made, a comfortable one from Mane early on. And then obviously Diaz's goal, which I must admit, I didn't realise how much of a deflection that was at the time. We kind of saw it deflect because we were, our view was, we're not quite side on to it, but we weren't that far. So to actually see the shot from behind and the wicked deflection it took from Bendica, I can see why it was so gutting for the Spurs defence. With everything they'd done, that was how Liverpool managed to break through. And you know what? I also want to talk about the atmosphere at Anfield. You'll probably like this, but the atmosphere at Anfield, it wasn't quite what it was all cracked out to be or made to be. I suppose, disappointed in a way. I have been there when it has been much noisier. But what I kind of felt was, and this is, I think, is testament to the way Tottenham played, I felt like it was really noisy for the first 10 minutes and pre-match, obviously, when they get singing and all that sort of stuff. But then I'd say after 10 minutes, when Spurs kind of weathered that early storm, and I think the Spurs had one break up the pitch. I can't remember what happened. I don't think it really ended with anything, but it just stopped the crowd really, going mad. And then that was probably it until the first 5-10 minutes of the second half. Then obviously Diaz's goal, when that went in, they kind of went mad for a couple of minutes. But then it was just like getting excited about corner kicks and the things like that. And it was a bit like, oh, this isn't really what I expected tonight. I expected your team in a title charge needing to win this game, like 90 minutes of just constant noise and making it really difficult for Tottenham. But Spurs players, to be fair, you know, Conte asked for that mentality. And I asked him this question afterwards. You know, you want this kind of improved mentality and fortitude from your team. They showed it. They were not put off by any noise they had. There were maybe a couple of early nervy passes, but nothing major. And a lot of that came from the passing around the press. So, yeah, I was a little bit surprised at this kind of fabled Anfield atmosphere. I saw it in little bits, but it was a day when I think actually Liverpool, and this will all link back in to Tottenham and North London Derby later, but I think Liverpool really needed the crowd 100% behind them the whole time, being noisy, and they weren't. And again, as I say, testament to Tottenham.
Yeah, it just seemed to be dead silence after Son and Scott.
You can hear the Spurs fans.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're thinking if you go in 1-0 down, then that's when you do need the fans behind you to really get behind you and roar you on to victory. But that wasn't the case. But, you know, you've got to give an awful lot of credit to Antonio Conte and Tottenham for how they approached the game and how they performed at Anfield, because you've seen a number of teams go there and just get ripped to shreds, but that wasn't the case. Spurs were, to a man, excellent on the night, deservedly got something out of the game, and it's just a shame it wasn't 3 points, really, because they played very well, and as you were saying, probably limited to Liverpool to very little in terms of chances. I can't remember Lloris, apart from that Sessegnon header, having a real save to make, really. But I think the ones what showed on the highlights from the first half were, you know, shots from distance, what were comfortable, weren't testers at all for him. Van Dijk hit the bar. But even in the second half, you're expecting Liverpool to really kick on when they're needing a goal and create those chances, but they weren't. And yeah, it's always going to be difficult when you've got a number of players behind the ball and there's limited spaces. And I think someone said it after the game, it might have been Conte, in terms of someone has a shot in this crowded box and it takes a deflection, then you can get like a lucky bounce maybe or a goal from it. But Liverpool just, no, it's strange really, having seen them play so well in the previous months, to not really doing that on Saturday. I think you've just got to give an awful lot of credit to Tottenham. But Spurs did exactly the same at City at the Etihad in February. Not many people gave them a chance at all at getting something from the game, but this is where Conte's at his best, isn't it? When he has like a full week on the training pitch, he can just drill it into his team. And yeah, they performed really well. I think you've got to give him a lot of credit for that performance.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was, like you say, it was the organisation, and that's what impressed me. And it didn't matter how old they were, because there were a few young players out there. You know, you think about Sessegnon, 21, Emerson, 23, Romero, then just turned 24. You know, a fair few people in that back line are pretty young, but they were tactically so disciplined. They knew exactly where they needed to be. They knew the moments that they could break forward. And yeah, and Højbjerg, obviously, we're going to talk about his miss, but I don't want that to really overshadow what I thought was a terrific performance from him as well. I thought he was everywhere. He was like an annoying rash on Liverpool. And as always, you know, when they moan about things like time wasting and things like that, it's often Højbjerg. He is those. He's you know, he's been drilled by in the big clubs, you know, Bayern Munich of knowing how to manage games, and he did that. It's just a shame he didn't manage to kind of do a better header towards the end, because we've been talking about a completely different scenario. But yeah, there were so many good performances. Even I'd say the attackers who probably could have done better on the day, even they kind of had a part to play in everything they did defensively. And I don't know, we're going to talk about defenders, because so we're going to talk about some of the incredible things we saw them do. But are we going to talk about Klopp? Shall I read out his quotes?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So if you're not aware by now, Jurgen Klopp was asked after the game, it was actually by Charlie from The Athletic, asked him whether he was impressed by Tottenham's defending, which essentially turned into waving kind of a red flag at a bull with Jurgen Klopp, because he said, "I'm sorry, I'm the wrong person for that. I don't like this kind of football, but that's my personal problem. I think they're world-class, and I think they should do more for the game. I think the game against Liverpool, they had 36 or 38% possession, but it's my problem. I cannot coach it, so that's why I cannot do it. So, yes, world-class players block all the balls. Really difficult. Atletico Madrid is doing it. Fine. They won whatever. Fine. Absolutely fine. I just can't. I respect everything they do, but it's not me." Your thoughts on that, Robert Guest?
Well, is Antonio Conte gone to be in front of the FA this week for bringing the game into disrepute for how Tottenham performed at Anfield? It's ridiculous. It's always the same with Klopp when Liverpool don't win. And it was the same in December when Tottenham drew 2-2. Was he complaining about long balls that day? Tottenham playing too many long balls?
I suppose battered them that day. They had so many chances that day.
Well, I think Liverpool, I could be wrong, Liverpool actually played more long balls that game than Spurs, but still criticised. He's always the same. Sometimes, you know, be gracious in defeat or when you draw, give credit to your opposition. They are one of the best teams in the world. And yeah, you just got to accept it at times, but he just doesn't seem to be able to do that. And it's a huge compliment to him and his side that teams come and set up that way, because you cannot go toe-to-toe to him, because you will get ripped to shreds. That's why Everton did it 2 weeks ago at Anfield, fighting for their lives. You cannot go play all-out attacking football, because they will annihilate you. You just can't do it. And for me, in terms of football now, there just seems to be a certain perception, probably since Pep Guardiola's Barcelona team was so successful 10, 13 years ago, that you have got to play that style of football. That's the right way to play it. But at the end of the day, there's no wrong way or right way of playing football. You concentrate on yourselves, first of all. You don't set up so you can just roll over and let Liverpool win like Klopp wants, like Liverpool want, like probably a lot of the media want them to win the league. You can't do that. You concentrate on your jobs. Spurs are fighting for a Champions League place. You've got to set up a certain way to leave Anfield with points. And they did that. I don't know with them. It's always the same. Always.
Well, at least he didn't blame the wind this time. Do you know what? I like Klopp. I do. And I love the way he's got his Liverpool team playing. I do think they're one of the most, attractive teams to watch, them and City, and just the gegenpress stuff. It's just incredible, their stamina. However, I'm with you on this. I just feel like this is the one area he lets himself down in. It's almost this, but you just didn't roll over and let us win attitude. Like, what are you talking about kind of thing? The whole point of football, especially at the top level, is that there are tactical battles. If a manager comes there and tactically sets up in his team, and this was not set up to draw, this was a tactic to come there and for Spurs to win, which they should have done, Tottenham. I just find it really odd. Especially, and Spurs fans have quickly kind of, as we said about when he spoke about long balls in the first game and how Liverpool actually played more, it was like, I don't know why he started talking about 36%, 38% possession, because that kind of reminds me of a certain night in Madrid that you and I were both at in the Champions League final, when Liverpool had, 35% of the possession that day. They played half of Spurs' 510 passes that night. Yet, shock horror, they were more efficient in front of goal. Spurs weren't, despite all the openings they created. It sounds very familiar. Yes, it sounds like Saturday night at Anfield. And I don't get that logic. It's almost like a holier-than-now thing. It's like, my style of football is absolutely fantastic, and whatever you guys do, it's beneath me. And I just don't like it. So it does. It's for a guy who, I like the way he conducts himself in a lot of things he does, but in terms of this, it just smacks of kind of sour grapes. That's what it is. It's almost like, yeah, we messed this up. Yeah, we kind of, you've put a big old dent in our title challenge. I'm going to get really annoyed at this. I didn't see the reasoning for it. I didn't see the positive in it. I didn't see how it benefited Klopp. Like I say, maybe it was some idea to push some kind of narrative, but nobody cares. It hasn't been this big thing. It hasn't created a big storm about how Liverpool was stopped. At the end of the season, if Liverpool finish second, that's all that will go down in history books. It won't be that Jurgen Klopp moaned that Antonio Conte's Tottenham didn't play exactly the same football as Liverpool in the 1-1 draw at Anfield. That's the beauty of football, is that everyone plays different kinds of the game. I just couldn't get where he was coming. I was kind of watching him. It was like, oh. Because I was only 10 feet away from him. And it's just like, what are you saying? It was interesting because we actually weren't entirely sure what he'd said. I think that we were so kind of surprised at the way he was talking. We weren't entirely sure. We wanted to listen back to what he'd said, which actually meant that, because Conte was waiting outside to come straight in afterwards. So we didn't actually get to ask the follow-up question because we were like, we better check exactly what he said first. Otherwise, we create an incident that maybe wasn't there. And then we listened to it back and was like, oh, man, he actually said what we thought he did. But I suppose the good thing is we've got the press conference tomorrow and Conte will be ready. He'll have been hearing that and thinking about it in the last few days. So if anything, we'll probably get an even better reaction. Gary Neville kind of weighed into it as well the next day, which surprised me. He quote tweeted Klopp's video of it, of him talking, and has said something along the lines of, I respect Antonio Conte, but this for me is why he wouldn't have been the right fit for Man United. As a, you know me, I'm not the kind of person to really respond to these big Twitter accounts. I don't really care most of the time. I just have more fun kind of larking about on Twitter with Spurs fans and Uzlock kind of stuff. But I saw this, I was just like, that's such a bad take. And no one seems to be really massively questioning this. This is the Man United scene that have been horrendous. Just got battered 4-0 by Brighton. It could have been even more. And look, I don't want Antonio Conte to go to Man U. No way I want him to be at Spurs next season, because I think he can do really great things with Spurs. But I just saw that and I had to reply, and just kind of had to point out the fact that, this was a game plan for a specific match. That's all it was. This isn't the way Tottenham play. It's the way they play in these kind of games where they're like, okay, well, we know possession-wise we're not going to be able to match them. We know that they're, these are teams that have been assembled expensively over years and they're absolutely fine-tuned. Whereas Conte's Tottenham, it's 6 months of work. That's all it is. And with a squad that isn't really his. So, yeah, I had to point out the fact that, you know, Conte's been in charge of Spurs 25 Premier League matches. In that time, they've scored 51 goals. That's the third highest total in the Premier League. It's only 7 fewer than Liverpool and 13 more than the United side that apparently he's not fit to manage or not the right person to manage. I just don't understand. I just couldn't understand it. Being tactically adaptable now is a bad thing. It's like almost, no, you should only play this way. You should only play this free-flowing, possession-based football. That's the only way to play. This kind of ideal of the way things should be. I don't know if I'm misremembering it, but Sir Alex Ferguson used to play in all different kind of styles. I don't remember them only playing the one way, and I think that was why he was so successful. I just find it staggering. So, yeah, I had to reply. And weirdly, at one point, I think more people seem to be responding to my tweet than his or something. It was very weird. So, like I say, it's not something I normally do whatsoever. But, yeah, I just found a whole comments from Klopp, that reaction from Gary Neville, I just found it weird. I just found it really odd. It's like, if you can't say that Conte is one of the world's best managers and can adapt to any match, you know, this isn't to say he's perfect. And we've seen this. We've seen certain decisions and tactical things in Spurs games that, you know, we haven't always liked. But to kind of say that he wouldn't have been a good fit, if Conte would have started the season at United, I think United probably would have finished. They probably would have challenged. I think they genuinely probably would have. I think they would have given City and Liverpool an actual run for their money. So I just find that weird. And also, Gary Neville, if I'm not mistaken, was pushing for Diego Simeone to be a Man United manager at one point. But now that's a manager who likes his pragmatic football. That is not a free-flowing, thrilling, attacking manager. I just found it weird. But yeah.
I've never got this thing why Antonio Conte isn't the right fit for Manchester United. He's a winner. Yeah. He might question what's happening at the club, but surely that's what's actually needed at Old Trafford right now.
It's a shambles right now. Everyone I know that reports that club says it's a shambles.
Well, as you were saying, in terms of being tactically adaptable, you've got to be as a modern manager. You can't just play the same way week in, week out. Prime example, Marcelo Bielsa at Leeds, one way of playing. In his first season at Leeds, back in the Premier League, they lost 6-2 at Manchester United. Leeds is supposed like cup final. They've been waiting for that game for years and years, and they were 2-0 down after 3 minutes, lost 6-2. But lo and behold, they came out of that game with so much praise because of their attacking ways. It's like, it's barmy. You've lost the game 6-2. There's like no positives to take out of it. And then this season, they've carried on playing exactly the same way. And the second season, you do get found out. And that's been the case this season. Leeds sit in the bottom three at the moment. They've lost 7-0 at Man City, 6-0 at Anfield. Spurs won 4-0 at Elland Road. Maybe if Bielsa had a different approach in games where he thought, yeah, we're going to have to be a bit more defensive here against the top teams, then they'd have a few more points on the board that wouldn't be in the bottom three. It's like, you have got to have another way of playing football. This perception of it's got to be one way is just totally wrong.
Yeah, and unless I'm mistaken, Bielsa has not been exactly trophy-laden in his career in recent decades. I know he started off, and I think that there was trophies there, but it's, yeah, I can't get my head around it. I cannot get my head around saying there's only one way to play football. It's baffling. I mean, you know, look at the different managers Everton have had this season. You could have had more varied managers if you tried.
And the thing is, at the end of the season, you remember who wins the league, where your team finishes. You don't go back a few years later and go, oh, I'd remember how well we played at Anfield, but we didn't win and all that. No, it's just, I don't get it. To be honest, you've got to be tactically adaptable. You cannot play the same way all the time.
Yeah, and maybe that was something that used to be said about Poch. Even Poch used to get that sometimes, that he would always say to us, my philosophy is what Tottenham do. I don't care what the opponent's going to do. And maybe that was one of his issues, that sometimes he didn't set out to counter what the opponents were going to do. And that's maybe why Spurs didn't win any trophies under him, because he wasn't quite adaptable enough. Maybe that's something. Obviously, he was a younger manager there. Maybe that's something he will learn or has learned. I don't know. But yeah, it's just such sour grapes from Klopp. It was almost like, I'm going to lash out now because I can't just admit that we failed to find a way to defeat this tactic. And twice this season. And also, he wasn't complaining when Spurs beat City twice, did he? Didn't complain at all, funnily enough. Spurs, he should be thanking Spurs, who gave him a 6-point advantage in the title race, but they couldn't take it. But yeah, let's lash out at Tottenham. let's try and patronise and belittle their approach to things. Didn't he say something like, that's why they're fifth, or something like that?
It really
lacked class. It really did.
It's just sour grapes, and it's always the same when Liverpool drop points, always. And it's only really, I'd probably say, like the past year, 18 months, when people have picked up on it. It's been the same since he's been at the club. Yeah. That's why quite a lot of people don't really like him. So,
big statement there. Quite a lot of people.
Oh, fans.
Are they people you know that wear blue shirts?
Right. Before we get back onto the game, obviously, as we said in the last episode, we've got a new sponsor, NordVPN. Ali, do you want to just talk about what a VPN is and the benefits of NordVPN?
No, it's just a quick shout out really for our sponsors, NordVPN. We've obviously been allowed to have a little kind of play around, and if you're wondering what a VPN is, it's a virtual private network is what it stands for, and it's the kind of thing that I suppose the key thing of it is protecting, I guess, is your privacy, protecting pretty much everything you do on the internet. That's his key purpose. It's kind of encrypting what you do, hides your IP address, and it allows you to kind of use public Wi-Fi in a safer way. That's its key element. But also, because of the actual natural side effects of the fact that you're able to connect to virtual private networks. Let's say, here I am in England. I can use virtual private networks from anywhere in the world. I could, I was playing around with it earlier this morning, and I was using one from New York, and I can use it from Australia, anywhere, Singapore, let's say. And which also, the natural side effect of that is if what you're using believes that you are in that location, it means you can access all the cool stuff that people in those countries can access as well. So it does kind of open up this, I suppose, different world of browsing, I guess, of, streaming various things you'd watch. That, I guess, that could include sports, movies, TV, whatever. It's a very cool service. It is, we've been allowed to have a little play around with it. And I remember using a VPN when Spurs were out on tour in Shanghai a few years back before the pandemic, because, you had to use a VPN to be able to use all the things we do at home. And that's just one very small element to it. Honestly, I really would recommend having a little read up about it and all the different things you can do. And actually, it's one of those things that most people, apart from the techie types, probably aren't too aware of. But actually, when you have a read of it, you're like, oh, do you know what? Actually, in most everyday things, that's probably incredible. But yeah, no, very cool to have VPN on board with us. And Guesty at the end of the episode is going to tell you a really good, it is something that kind of tickles your fancy, and all because of Golden Guest Talk Tottenham as well. You get a bit of a whack of a discount off as well.
Right, let's get back on to the football, and I think we need to talk about Tottenham's back three and the wing backs on the night. Anfield, I thought they were absolutely fantastic. I think it was Ben Davies came out with the Man of the Match award from BT Sport. He produced such a good block on Mohamed Salah late in the second half, where it looked like Salah was getting the shot off, what was going to bring Hugo Lloris into action prior to that. Christian Romero, really, really good header under pressure from a crossing when Luis Diaz was steaming in, looking to get on the end of that. And then in the first half as well, just Romero and Dyer producing a number of good blocks and tackles that just remained solid throughout, coming up against a feared front three in Diaz, Sadio Mane and Mohamed Salah, who have been absolutely outstanding in recent months. So they deserve so much praise for the performance. And I think you've got to say the same about the wing-backs. Emerson Royal, who has come in for quite a bit of criticism since he's been at the club. Yes, his playing the final third has let him down numerous times, but he has always played as a right back. And I think against Liverpool, against City in February, it's actually suited him where he's got to be more defensive. And he put in a real shift, got forward a couple of times, a couple of crosses probably weren't where they should have been. I think there was one where he tried to saw him in a good position, what he got wrong. And then on the opposite flank, Ryan Sessegnon set up Son, really good run into the box. And yeah, full credit to the back line. And I think you'll certainly agree with that.
Oh, 100%. I called them in my talking points the white wall, because they just were. They were so, you know, that it took such a rubbish deflected goal. And obviously it had to come from Luis Diaz, a player that Spurs, you know, looked into signing. They were magnificent, the Spurs defence. I'd say maybe across the line, perhaps each of them's best performance for Spurs, potentially. It could be up there. Ben Davies was phenomenal. Ben Davies, the amount of times he flung himself into, he just puts his body on the line. This is what I think has always wound me up about when he gets scapegoated. It's a bit like, nobody probably on that team cares more about Spurs getting a result than Ben Davies. Honestly, do you remember under Mourinho? I know it was all a bit like the way he kind of said it was something about, you know, being a man. It was all a bit, I wasn't keen on that side of it. But the point he was trying to make, I think, was that I remember it was Ben Davies came off the bench, even though he was injured, just to play for Tottenham, just to make sure of trying to get the result. Ben Davies, you remember back in the day, they used to kind of like, he had that one performance at Anfield when Mane, he was up on the left and Mane kind of skinned him a couple of times. And he wasn't the first, he wasn't the last player that Sadio Mane has done that to. But it became this kind of tag that was just like stuck on him all the time. Oh, Ben Davies up against Mane, oh no, kind of thing. I think when you see him play, I know he's playing in a slightly different position, but when you see him on nights like this, I just hope he starts to get respect that he deserves, Ben Davies. He was incredible. And I love the fact, like I say, I finally watched Match of the Day 2 and they kind of pinpointed a few of the flying blocks he'd done, including the one on Salah, which, and actually what you didn't really see, he kind of got up and it was almost like as close as Ben Davies will ever come to doing a celebration of a block. You know, if that had been Romero, Romero would have like gone up to Salah and just like roared in his face. But you could see Ben Davies kind of got up and it was like he shouted something and his fist was kind of pumping. He was phenomenal. Salah got no change on the day from him or Sessegnon. He was one of the best players in the world right now, and he was muted. You know, he was as muted as that Anfield crowd at times, and maybe that played its part in it and why it was so quiet. But Ben Davies got some of the stats here. Blocked 4 shots, made 10 clearances, made 1 key interception and 1 key tackle. Christian Romero was just superb again. He's having a really nice run of games at the moment, Romero. He's really found his groove in the Premier League. And I still have to keep reminding myself kind of how young he is. But there were times when I think he played like one nervy ball which hit the back of a Liverpool player or something and it bounced back and gave him a little chance. And he literally just about 30 seconds to a minute later went, "Nah, I'm going to try it again. Because I'm not going to be put off by that. We have to pass around this press." And he stuck to that plan. He was so, so good. He was it was a few moments where he was dribbling around the press as well. But he also loves the kind of the dirty stuff, the getting his head in. There was one diving header I remember him doing that was like right in amongst people's boots. He was phenomenal. I think I had his stats here as well. Oh, and actually, that was I found fascinating as well. Is after the game, a lot of the Liverpool journalists, the regulars at Anfield, they were like, oh, that Romero guy is good, isn't he? And it was like, it was like really weird. It was like, have you not seen him? He's a class. And then I kind of thought back and it was like, well, he did miss the game, the first game, didn't he, between Spurs and Liverpool, because he was out with his hamstring injury. And maybe if you, you know, we know it ourselves, if you're very focused on one club, maybe you don't see the good that's going on elsewhere. And thank goodness for Spurs, because you think about it, and it just becomes more and more bizarre that Spurs were able to get him ahead of some of these big clubs, you know, these Champions League title-winning clubs, that they must be looking right now and thinking Romero could fit into any team in the world. I think he's genuinely that good. And what's scary is that Conte clearly feels he can be a lot better. He's like, he's going to be just ridiculous. Where have I got? I've got his stats here as well, which I was going to read out for you. 8 clearances, 1 tackle, 1 interception, 1 block shot. And then there was Eric Dier. Eric Dier, that's got to be up there with his best performances. He was a leader. He organised that back line. And Liverpool had, you know, when Klopp talks about tactics, for some unknown reason, Liverpool's tactic seems to be, let's cross into the box where these big defenders are, and our attackers are quite small. Let's keep, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold, the amount of times he was flinging in crosses into the box. I was like, who are you passing to? Because Dier and Romero are like, thank you very much. And they were just heading them away. I mean, Dier's stats, 2 interceptions, 1 tackle, 11 clearances, and 3 blocked shots. It's phenomenal. They were phenomenal. The 3 of them, I think I gave them all 9s in my player ratings. And, you know, it's probably unfair to not give them 10s. It was purely because of that deflected shot that got by them that they didn't end up with the clean sheet. They were brilliant. Wing-backs, yes. You know, you spoke about the criticism of Emerson, and we have, me especially, have added to that criticism on this podcast because, you know, there's no getting around it. He's a fullback playing as a wing-back, and that's naturally not going to suit his game at times. But I think, hands down, that was the best performance he's had in the Spurs shirt. He was brilliant. His defending was excellent. His calm, the calmness under pressure as well. His passing, you know, was not... I think we were all a bit scared in the press box of saying, like, Emerson's playing well, because you kind of felt like you were going to jinx him and he was going to do something daft. But, you know, that's something that we used to say about Serge Aurier. You know, he had a big mistake in him. He'd give away a penalty, things like that. And I think we're maybe a little bit unfair because of what Emerson can't do in an attacking sense. Maybe we label him in a defensive sense as being a bit of a calamity and a disaster. But in truth, he's actually more solid in the defensive stuff. That is where he plays well. And like you say, last couple of games, I think Conte has deliberately said, don't worry too much about the attacking. We'll let, you know, Kulusevski, or it was Lucas in the last game, we'll let them do what they do. You just kind of sit a little bit back. Maybe not be so much of a wing back. Maybe almost be more as a kind of halfway person, like a bit of a hybrid of a wing back and a full back. And it's benefited him. You know, he played well against Leicester and he was superb against Liverpool. They got so little out of that side that, you know, I think Robertson came off as well, having made no impact. They actually took him off. Whether that was a tiredness thing, I don't know, but he was having no joy down Emerson's side whatsoever. And I think I've got some Emerson stats as well. I'm the stat man today. So, yeah, when I was talking about his passing, 78.8% of his 33 passes found their mark. Half of his 6 crosses found a Tottenham shirt, which is a big improvement for Emerson. It might not sound it, but it is. And 4 out of his 5 longer lofted balls he played all went to Tottenham players. And obviously, there was a really weird moment for the goal. I still have no idea why he was on the left-hand side of the pitch. I can only presume, because I suddenly looked up, I was writing something, like, what is he doing over there? I can only presume Liverpool had counter-attacked or something, and he'd had to run back, and he was on that side because of that. But then he took the ball really nicely. I think it was from Lloris's kick. Controlled it nicely, looked up, played this bizarre but effective lofted punt to Kane, which was probably the one long ball you could say Spurs played. Kane, you know, who, it wasn't phenomenal on the day, but he was okay. Controlled it superbly, and obviously then led to the goal, which we'll talk about in a little moment. But I just thought Emerson was very, very, very good. And I think, how do I put this? I think you've got him on the right and you've got someone in Sessegnon who is a natural wing back. And I just think Emerson, he just showed people that there's still a place for him. I still don't, I'm not entirely 100% sure whether he'll be a Tottenham player next season, but I think he showed that there can still be a place for him. If a move for some reason doesn't happen, you know, he can kind of be a part. I think the cross that you were talking about, he could have just played a slightly better cross. I think Son and Sessegnon were in the box, and he played what ended up being a deeper cross that Sessegnon just about kept in, and it unfortunately kind of hit it against Son and it went off. And it's just in those moments, if there was a way of training him to be something that he isn't at this moment, and that's being a more attacking player, you know, he's got the natural attributes to be a very, very fit, great engine on him, and like I say, defends really well. And then finally, Sess, who, you know, pretty much before every match that Ryan Sessegnon plays, I turn to Gessie and say, oh, you know, needs to be a big game from Sess today. Needs to be a big one, a good game for him. And he provided it. I felt he did. I think he would have taken a lot of confidence because I'm pretty sure the home game he kept Salah very quiet on the whole. And, you know, the thing with Sess, we've said this before, and it's something that Conte has said as well, he just needs to believe in himself. And I think we almost saw that journey within a match on Saturday. Early on, he was nervous. He was probably one of the few players that did get a little bit affected maybe by the atmosphere. He played a few iffy passes, got the wrong side of Salah early on. And then we had that kind of miscued header that Lloris had to palm away. But after that, he just grew and he grew. And it was very reminiscent after that of his performance at the Etihad when I felt he was superb defensively. And again, 21 years old, I have to stress this. And again, social media beforehand, a bit like with Ben Davies, it's like, oh my God, Salah up against Sessegnon, we're stuffed, kind of thing. Trent Alexander-Arnold's going to roast him down that side. No, they didn't. Sess, just like he did at City at the Etihad, it didn't matter the quality of opposition. He was so tactically disciplined and he just didn't give them any real room. And the one time Salah got past him, he very cynically, and something that the likes of Mourinho and Conte would have loved, he just dragged him back. He took the yellow card and thought, it's more important that you don't get through. And that's the sign of a maturing player. It is. And of course, attacking-wise, you could see him getting more and more confident. He started to break up the pitch, started to get to the touchline. And then as soon as that Emerson lofted ball went to Kane, Sessegnon was off like a shot. And I saw, I think it was Alexander-Arnold, looked around at one point to try and see if there's anyone behind him. Because of Sess's pace, he wasn't there at that point. And so he clearly, the Liverpool defender thought, well, there's no real danger. And Sess just suddenly put on the afterburners, became a great option for Kane. And then another sign of maturity, rather than just take a shot at goal, which I think many young players would have done that position, first time pass across to Sonny. It was perfect. And we also need to do a bit of a shout out for Sonny as well, because that was his 20th Premier League goal this season. And none of them penalties. He's only two behind Salah now as well. What a big game player he is for Tottenham. Actually, just what a player he is for Tottenham. The amount of goals and assists that man has scored this season at vital points. Yeah, terrific. So, yeah, back line, fantastic. Sonny, another big moment for him. It's just a shame they couldn't have got 3 points because they deserved it.
Yeah, just going back to Ben Davies, obviously Tottenham are looking at bringing in a new left-sided centre-back this summer. I mean, if they do, there's no guarantee whoever comes in is going to start. Going on Ben Davies's performances under Conte, he's just hit another level, really. So that's going to be...
That's what you need. Competition.
Yeah. Yeah, he's only going to benefit Tottenham in the long run, bringing in, you know, better quality players. But I can see Davies still keeping his place in the team. I don't think you can drop him, certainly on current form anyway. Right. Let's get to that missed chance for Pierre-Emile Højbjerg. Obviously,
we have to. I don't want to relive it.
Obviously, everyone was probably going on post-match about Tottenham's defensive performance, but they did have a number of chances in attack. Some really good moves at time. There was one down the right, Emerson and Kulusevski linking up with a brilliant ball over the top, what ended up at Harry Kane's feet. Good touch in the area, but Jordan Henderson got in there with a really good sliding tackle. Pierre-Emile Højbjerg hit the post as well. Tottenham did have the chances, certainly on the day, to add another goal to the tally. But it's just a shame 94th minute, was it? Something like that. Harry Winks puts in a float across to the back post. Højbjerg and Bergwijn are there. Højbjerg, instead of heading towards goal, decide to head it across, looking to pick out Harry Kane, and he just gets it all wrong, unfortunately. I think it's one of those, if it comes off, everyone will probably label him a genius. But I think for me in that position, you've got to go for goal. Go for goal. If you miss it, you miss it, fine. But there's a chance then, if you miss it, Alisson maybe palms it out, lands nicely to Kane or even to Bergwijn, and Spurs nick it. So fingers crossed that doesn't prove costly come the end of the season. But we could really have been talking about 3 points if you went for goal there.
Robert Guest claims Pierre-Emile Højbjerg denies Tottenham Champions League entry.
I did not say that.
Yeah, oh, it was such a shame. It was like, you just saw the cross coming in, you're thinking, oh my goodness, there's two Spurs players completely unmarked in the box. I was like, no, 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 what are you doing? And I just, that's the thing, he didn't even head it across, he kind of headed it backwards. And I get it, it was like the headed equivalent of what Cesc did for Son for the goal. That's what he was trying to do, I think. But like you say, head that across the goal. If you head it to the far post, you've got one of two things happens. Either, Alisson probably can't hold that ball. He probably has to push it, and then you've got Kane there. Or if you miscue it slightly, it goes to Kane, who then heads it home probably. But he just did the one thing that was no good, and that was to head it backwards into nobody, and it was just able to be cleared. Yeah, I did feel like Bergwijn was a little bit of a threat when he came on as well. I think he had one little run at goal as well. And, yeah, he got into these good places because obviously he'll want to make up for the miss against Liverpool that's kind of held against him for forever. Was it last season, wasn't it, under Mourinho? I think it was maybe it was two chances I think he missed, actually.
It was two chances that day, yeah.
Yeah, so he'll be desperate to kind of score against them. But that chance, it was a biggie. It was a huge one. It would have just changed the whole focus of the entire run-in. The North London derby would have been with just that. Would have been a single point, wouldn't it? Was it single? Yeah, it would have been a single point between them. 2 points. Would have been 2 points between them, wouldn't it? I'm getting confused. Yeah, it was two points to begin with, so it would have been two. Yeah. Yeah, thanks for making me relive it. I'm trying to put it out of my mind. And then I saw a match of the day two this morning. I was like, oh, yeah, that was really more rubbish than I remembered it being. And now you've put it back. So, yes, I hope it's not costly in the end. And I hope events elsewhere conspire in a good way to help Tottenham. But it was a huge moment and one that he will have replayed in his head after the game.
Let's get on to the North London derby then, as you brought it up. Obviously, Arsenal 4 points ahead now.
Yeah,
Arsenal can secure a Champions League place on Thursday at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Don't say that.
If they do pick up all 3 points, it's a huge, huge game. Spurs have to win it. But I've got a feeling Arsenal will drop points in the running in the final two, whether that's at Newcastle at St James's or Everton do Tottenham a big favour at the Emirates on the final day. I don't know, but given how Newcastle have done under Eddie Howe, I can see Arsenal potentially dropping points in the North East. But obviously, it's all on this game Thursday at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. You looking forward to it then?
No. I never look forward to North London derbies, ever. I really don't. Even when Spurs win afterwards, they're just the most uncomfortable, anxious things. And, you know, I'd like to think of myself as pretty objective when I write about Tottenham, despite the fact that clearly, you know, when I was a kid, my dad would take me to Tottenham games. I was brought up a Tottenham fan. But I think, objectively, I managed to just look at things, hopefully, in a slightly more rational view than a fan view. But that is the most difficult game to not get wound up by. I do. I find myself getting so annoyed at things that happen in it. And it is. It's the most challenging one for me. And I just don't enjoy it. I feel, especially at the Emirates, at the Spurs Stadium, hopefully it'll be slightly better. I tell you what, though. The noise. has to just be incredible. I know this is on the players, and I know the players are the only ones who can win this game. But my goodness, the fans have to play their part. They can't. I know they're going to be anxious. I know they're going to be probably pessimistic at points as well. But they cannot transfer that to the team in any way. They've got to be that 12th man. This is the first North London derby at that stadium with, like, hopefully a full crowd. I mean, I think it's sold out. I think it sold out a while back. So it should be packed. It needs to be, you know, I was talking about Anfield earlier, its selective atmosphere. It needs to be wall-to-wall noise for the entire game, from that first whistle, from the moment that they stop the "can't smile without you," which, you know my opinions on the lack of hype up that brings. But what it does have is that big, like, roar when the song finishes just before kick-off. And that needs to be huge. And those opening minutes, it needs to be the most hostile, uncomfortable experience for those Arsenal players possible. You know, I'm not talking about throwing stuff at them or harming them physically in any way, but as in terms of a noise, just a feeling of pressure put on them, because at the moment, they've got no pressure on them. They don't have to win that match. You know, I think probably a draw would end up being enough for them. I think it would make it very difficult for Tottenham. Tottenham have to win that game for me. So Arsenal aren't going in with any real pressure. They've got that safety net. And I think the fans need to help put that pressure back on them. You know, every time that they mess up a chance, the fans need to be kind of, that kind of thing. And just even little moments like that. They just need to get inside their heads. Because I do genuinely believe if Tottenham play the way if Tottenham played with the desire they had at Anfield, I think they win. I think they will, because I think even watching Arsenal against Leeds, Leeds imploded like 27 minutes in, two goals down, and Ayling sent off as well. Yet, do you know what? They were a Rodrigo weak header at the end, away from getting a point. So Arsenal are there, and that was at the Emirates. Arsenal are there to be got at. They were on a good run. You know, fair play to them. They've picked up their results after that little run of three defeats, and they've got the results where they need to. They've done the job. But there's no way that they are, like, impenetrable. They can absolutely be scored against. And again, it's just about the atmosphere on the day. And every big player needs to turn up. Tottenham can't have a day when only one of them decides they're going to rock up. That defence needs to do exactly what they did again. And Kane needs to be, you know, we know Kane loves North London derby. He loves the derby game. He needs to be up for this. Sonny, exactly what he does. I think it's going to be a new experience for Kulusevski, and we know what he can do. I want Romero to not get wound up. He's my worry. He's my one worry, is that how hyped up he's going to be, eager to impress, and how much I think Arsenal will be aware that he's the one they can probably wind up. I mean, even that tackle on Jordan Henderson, watching that back on Match of the Day, was a bit like, oh my goodness, if you just mistimed that slightly more, that could have been a horrendous kind of start. So yeah, he's got to be on his best behaviour, because it's a huge game. It could be up there with one of the biggest North London derbies in years, because, you know, Spurs fans have had the kind of misfortune of watching Arsenal win the league back at White Hart Lane. They cannot have Arsenal finishing fourth and securing Champions League football at the stadium on Thursday night. Because that would be the first time. How many years is it since Arsenal finished above Spurs? What are we, 5-6 years?
Is it when Arsenal got second on the final day when Tottenham lost at Newcastle?
Yeah, last season.
2015-16, yeah, long time.
Yeah, so that's been a while. And Tottenham cannot give that up, honestly. It is, I'm not going to enjoy the match whatsoever. I will hopefully enjoy whatever happens at the end of it when it's finished. Because, yes, Arsenal are, you know, it doesn't change for them. They're not going to slip out of fourth place, whatever the result. But I tell you what, they get beaten in a North London derby, and just suddenly the morale shift, the doubts and everything, And it's not going to be an easy trip to Newcastle. Yes, Newcastle got slapped by Man City, but Man City are absolute class, and there will be a reaction to that from Newcastle as well, you'd think. And then, yes, that team in blue, you've promised they're going to do a job on the final day as well. So, yeah, just do your job, Tottenham. Just win the game. They win all three games. I think they might do it. I think Arsenal, the pressure might be too much, but they have to do their own job and not care about any of what can happen elsewhere.
Yeah, it's very much just concentrate on yourself, isn't it? And yeah, I'm just looking forward to a big tackle from Christian Romero inside the first 30 seconds or so to set the tone. I think it'll be his first North London derby experience as well. I don't think he was in the team in September. Was he on the lads' holiday in Croatia that weekend?
It might have. Did he play in the Mind Series game? Was he fit enough yet for the start of pre-season?
That's a friendly though, isn't it?
It is a friendly. It was quite a good match that day. But yeah, it was still very much a friendly.
Yeah, I think Romero was probably in Croatia in September. I think he came in against Chelsea the following week, if I remember rightly. But yeah, then as you said, Arsenal are very much there. You can get at them. I know they've won the last four on the trot, but prior to that, they lost against Palace, Brighton and Southampton. And Southampton have been on the beach for a number of weeks now. And then I'm just taking a look at Arsenal's team from yesterday. I mean, you're looking at the team on paper. Spurs on paper have a better team. You look at
here we go again with our on paper.
I mean, you look at Arsenal's team, Cedric Suarez, right back, Rob Holding, Elneny, and Nketiah up front.
For those who can't see Rob Guest's face right now, he's almost got a sneer. It's almost like a meh kind of when he's reading out these names, which is the scariest way. You can tell you've got no Spurs like fandom in you because...
Yeah, just wait. Let me finish my point.
You sound like Jurgen Klopp. That's what you sound like.
Let me finish my point.
Okay.
It's not the greatest Arsenal team on paper when you look at the individuals, but it's about the team, not the individuals. And Arsenal as a team have done really, really well under Arteta this season. And yeah, they're very much in the driving seat for fourth at the moment. And it's going to be really, really interesting, the game on Thursday night. North London derby under the light, 60,000 plus Tottenham fans in. Fingers crossed they will get the 3 points and then they'll take that into the final two games and potentially could all come down to the final day of the season.
Yeah, it really could. It's going to be interesting to see how the whole dynamics of who's played when. You know, Spurs obviously playing slightly earlier. I think they'll need that because that would have been a draining experience at Anfield. You know, the energy they would have had to put in that, whereas maybe Arsenal less, especially against 10 men for about an hour. You'd think it will probably balance up in that respect. It's just so big. I know I say I'm going to hate that side of thing, but as journalists, it's, you know, these are the games that we kind of get into it to write about. And for the players, hopefully, these are the matches that they want to play in. It's going to be, God, Conte on the touchline is going to be an emotional wreck. He really is. I mean, we see him in the games where there's not as much on the line and he is flinging himself around. I was watching him at Anfield. The amount of, he's just like directing them. He's like a composer, just kind of conducting exactly where they need to be at all times, some of those players. You know, I worry for him on Thursday night because I think he's going to be so wound up tightly. He's just going to be like like an exploding spring when the game actually starts. It's going to be everywhere. And it's a derby. There's going to be some bad tackles. There's going to be flare-ups. There's going to be probably a VAR decision or two that we're either going to hold our breath about or whatever. And it's just about which team handles the pressure on the day. Just even thinking about it now, we've got the press conference tomorrow. Unusually, normally for midweek games, we have the press conference the day before, but Conte wants it to be 2 days before this time, which is going to be a slight departure in the way we do things. And it just kind of ramps up the pressure even earlier, I guess, and the focus on the match. And we haven't even spoken about the fact that, and I'm sure Conte will be asked about this, there's going to be a little spice about the fact that this game should have been played, was it in January? But Arsenal, you know, were absolutely devastated by the huge outbreak of one reported COVID case in their camp. And obviously the game was postponed that day. And Spurs are not happy. Conte still is not happy about that. I remember when Arteta, what did he moan? He moaned about something. Was it fixture scheduling or something like that? And yeah, Conte very quickly came out and was like, you can't complain about anything, can you? You got a game called off because of one COVID case. And you loaned out your own players. So there's going to be spice in that. That's the journalists are going to stoke that up ahead of the game. There's going to be that little niggle to it as well. It's going to have a game that's going to have everything. I just hope Spurs come out the right end of it.
Thursday very much play the game, not the occasion, I think. And if Spurs get the 3 points, then that'll certainly ramp up pressure on Arsenal going into the weekend. Spurs play on Sunday, early kickoff against Burnley. Arsenal play Monday night at Newcastle under the lights at St James's, their last home game of the season. So they'll be looking to finish the season off in style. So, yeah, hopefully on the next podcast, we are talking about 3 points for Tottenham. So I think we'll leave that there for today's latest episode of Golden Guest Tottenham. We've had plenty to discuss following the draw at Liverpool, Jurgen Klopp's comments, Gary Neville's tweet, and then the North London derby. So as ever, thank you for listening and keep with us at football.london for all your latest Tottenham news. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goldguest to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, plus free threat protection, plus one additional month for free. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee.